You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Any discussion of economics include numbers, and here are some unique numbers for you to contemplate. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports there were about 11 million unfilled jobs at the end of October. In November, there were 6.9 million people who were unemployed. So when you do the math, you see there are nearly 4 million more jobs available than workers to fill them. Shouldn't the nation have full employment? 2021 has been the year of the Great Resignation, when millions quit their jobs looking for more money, better working conditions, or a more fulfilling career. Employers, who in some cases are desperate to hire, aren't quite desperate enough. There seems to be a mismatch. Joining us to talk about this and other economic topics today, Washington Post economics correspondent Heather Long, formerly a columnist and deputy editorial page editor for the Patriot News in Harrisburg. Heather, before we get into the job situation, the big news out of Washington yesterday was that West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin said he won't support President Biden's $2 trillion Build Back Better proposal that would address climate change and some social safety nets. Manchin's opposition could kill the plan. Will that have an impact on the economy?
It'll definitely have an impact on the economy, Scott. First of all, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me. It was no surprise that the Wall Street firm Goldman Sachs, certainly not known to be very liberal, immediately put out a research note last night talking about how not passing Build Back Better would be a negative for growth, certainly for next year. They trimmed their forecast for growth for the first three quarters. And mainly why they're doing that is they said, look, if we don't pass that bill, yes, there won't be some of those business tax increases that were mainly going to fall on larger corporations, and that's a positive for the stock market. But there was a lot of money in that bill to help particularly working class and lower income Americans. And without that money, the consumption is likely to be less than what they had forecast and what most people were expecting next year. So that means those monthly child tax credit payments that we're giving lower income parents an extra $300 a month for kids under six and an extra $250 a month for kids ages 6 to 17 wouldn't happen. A lot of subsidies to buy healthcare won't happen, and a lot of subsidies to make childcare more affordable won't happen. So that's kind of the big picture economic rundown. Obviously, Senator Manchin had a lot of concerns about inflation, which is running near a 40-year high. And Goldman Sachs and others have pointed out that they do expect inflation to remain high for the next few months. So if that's Senator Manchin's main concern, it's hard to see how he comes around to anything near the size of a 1.7 or 1.8 trillion bill.
See, there has been a back and forth about what that bill would do, and what kind of impact it would have on inflation. From the people you've spoken with, what are you hearing that the BBB, as it's been referred to, what kind of impact it would have on inflation?
Yeah, Scott, there's no doubt that it would help to lower a lot of key costs in the medium to long term. So, 4 years out, 5 years out, it should make some of those drugs costs lower. It should certainly make childcare costs lower. But the big debate is what happens in the next few months. And that's where it's a little bit trickier to know. There is more money being put into the hands of people who we would expect to go out and spend more. That keeps demand high and that keeps these inflation high potentially. But the counter argument is that who gets hit the most by inflation? It's a lot of lower income and working class families, and they're the ones who would have gotten the most help from this bill. So I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of what would happen in the next few months. I think it is safe to say that at the end of the day, this spending was offset mostly by tax increases. And when you do that, the overall macroeconomic picture, it wouldn't add, it's not like we were at 6.8% inflation and this bill would have caused 7.8% inflation, but whether it would have caused 6.8 to go to 7 temporarily for a few months, yeah, that's certainly possible.
Latest figure I saw was that the Build Back Better bill would add $369 billion to the federal budget deficit. Does that even matter anymore, Heather? I mean, during the Reagan years, up until, just a few years ago, well, actually up until the pandemic, we often heard about what kind of an impact the budget deficit would have on the future, on budgets, on the economy overall. Does that matter anymore?
Oh, Scott, that's such a good question. And I wish people could see I'm shaking my head. I mean, I have certainly read a lot about debt concerns when I was at the Patriot News a decade ago. And then to sit here and say that almost $400 billion adding to the deficit doesn't matter, that's not right. Yes, every dollar added to the deficit ultimately gets added to the U.S. debt. We're paying for this by borrowing from the future, and there is a real cost to that. Now, that said, when we talk about the number $369 billion, that's spread out over 10 years. So it's not like that all would hit in 2022. You have to spread that amount over the next decade. And we are, so you're really more we're talking like, $40 to $50 billion next year added from this bill. And that's in a $22 trillion economy. And so that's why a lot of economists say, look, this is kind of, a drop in the bucket in the inflation discussion, because it's simply not that big anymore in the whole context of the U.S. economy.
I have to admit that as of this moment, I don't know what the markets are doing, but I did hear this morning that the futures were down like 1%. And we know that the stock market is not a good barometer of the economy, but it does react to news. So it appears as though the markets aren't looking favorably at this news from Senator Manchin yesterday.
I think you're right, but we also have to remember that this Omicron variant has picked up hugely. I just received this morning, I was supposed to attend the big World Economic Forum in Switzerland in January. They've just postponed that meeting. Part of my office was supposed to come back early next year. We just received notice that we won't be back in Washington, D.C. until end of January or February. I think many businesses probably in Pennsylvania and certainly up and down the East Coast and across the country have been receiving similar notices. So, some of the stock market reaction in the last few days and this morning is also in response to seeing more and more businesses shut down, at least temporarily, or keep employees at home. That's also going to dampen consumption, at least for a few weeks until hopefully things get a little better on that front. So unfortunately, it's just like a double whammy. It's a 1-2 punch here at the end of the year, certainly for the president, but also for the nation's economy. There is some talk. I will say the wording of Senator Manchin yesterday on those talk shows, on Fox he was on, it's he clearly closed the door on the current bill. But, whether or not they could negotiate something that would get to a place he could say yes on, there still seems to be some possibility there. And certainly the White House is going to try very hard in January. So I don't know that it's totally done forever, but obviously it's more of back to a 50-50 chance whether anything passes.
Yeah, I should have mentioned Omicron obviously is a big factor, maybe a bigger factor on the markets than even Senator Manchin's announcement yesterday. So you're missing out on a trip to Switzerland because of it?
I know. Don't cry for me. but yes, I just use that as an example of how this is rising across the world. That World Economic Forum was something that brings together leaders of business and government and nonprofits from around the world. And obviously, the situation has gotten to a point, not just in the United States, but in many countries again, where some countries in Europe are instituting close to a lockdown again, or are sending kids home from school, which is usually a last resort. So anyway, I think that's clearly going to have a bit of a toll here on the economy.
I have to admit that one of the first things I thought of when I heard about the Senator Manchin not supporting Build Back Better, and this relates to what we want to talk about today, and that is the job situation, is that one of the reasons that so many people have not returned to work, especially women, was childcare. and that that was one of the areas of Build Back Better that many Americans supported, and probably one of the most important parts of it, if you, you know, aside from climate change and some of the other things, but child care has become such an issue. I mean, so if Build Back Better doesn't happen, what happens as far as child care goes going forward, and help from the federal government?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Scott. It's my number one worry about the economy. We currently have 1.5 million women who dropped out of the labor force during the pandemic, mostly to take care of their families and their kids or elderly relatives who were sick and who just have not been able to get back in. They either don't feel comfortable or the situation is not as stable yet enough for them to get back in. And we've just never seen anything like this before. I need to underscore that you may recall during the Great Recession, everyone was worried about men. Men dropped out of the labor force and men didn't come back. And that was true of the 2001 recession and the 1990s recessions. It was always men dropping out while women continued to gain. But this recession was totally different since it hit the service sector so hard, which is more where women are employed, and obviously hit so the schools so hard and daycare so hard. Earlier in the show, you were talking about we have 11 million unfilled jobs and nearly 7 million unemployed people. And you know, that, why do we have this 4 million gap? Well, basically that 4 million gap is made up about half from early retirements, you know, people who decided to just retire early. And the other half is made up of women who dropped out of the labor force. So I think it is the top question for the economy is how do we get these women back, women who are in their 30s and 40s, you know, in their prime working years and have a lot of great experience. And, you know, certainly the key to that, as we've learned from other countries, including Japan, has been able to really raise its women's labor force participation. It has been passing parental leave. So giving women some paid time off, more than just a week at the moment in the U.S., right? We have no paid time off, which is just baffling to pretty much every other country on the planet. And secondly, we don't really have very affordable childcare in this country, which is very different from most of our peer competitor nations. So that was really probably one of the biggest benefits of Build Back Better to the economy long term, was what you were saying, that it was going to address these two fundamental long term issues in the U.S. economy. And I worry a lot. I worry a lot about, does this not get addressed for another 10 to 20 years in the United States?
Well, is there a plan B? I mean, other than what was in Build Back Better for childcare and family leave, is there a plan B?
Well, I'm a little more optimistic on parental leave. You know, certainly we've heard a number of Republicans in the Senate talk about different plans on parental leave. Obviously, there's always a debate about how you fund it. Is it a government program versus giving tax incentives to businesses to give their employees some sort of paid leave plan? A number of cities and have enacted their own plans around this. So we're starting to see some movement on parental leave. I mean, it's probably decades too late, but hey, better late than never. Childcare is a lot trickier and honestly, perhaps even more urgent in the sense that I've written about this a few times. Daycare, believe it or not, is one of the least recovered industries. You know, we all drive around town. You see those "we're hiring" signs outside the various fast food restaurants and other restaurants and stores. But if you look, restaurants are down about 5% still in job, you know, employee headcount. Daycares are down 10%. So, you know, they're not back anywhere close to the staffing levels that they were at the end of 2019 and early 2020. And of course, what did they close first? They closed the infant and the toddler rooms because those require a lot more staff. You know, you can't have more than four babies with one staff person. You need a lot of staff to run an operation like that. And so without those daycares open, that means a lot of parents, especially women, can't go back to their jobs, or it's very difficult for them to get back to work. So it's really a crisis. The state of Illinois started giving out bonuses to daycare workers to try to stop them from leaving. Not only are people not coming back, but the current workers are leaving. So unfortunately, Scott, I personally have not heard any other talk beyond what was in Build Back Better. better. Unfortunately, right or wrong, Senator Manchin, that was one of the parts of the bill that he struggled a lot with. So I don't know if that will get kicked out or if there is a possibility that it could get carved out and passed on its own.
Heather, we've talked about these things before, but just for context's sake, I want to ask you a few questions just to provide some background here. You touched on this. 11 million unfilled jobs, almost 7 million unemployed. Why are those jobs, other than retirements or people not going back to work because of child care, why are those jobs going unfilled?
Well, that's a huge part of the story, what you just talked about, is we still have a really large number of people who stopped working during this pandemic and just haven't come back. And that's going to be a key question in 2022. Do some of those women and early retirees, let's call them, decide to come back? We did actually see there was a lot of fear after the Great Recession in 2008, 2009. We saw a similar pattern of early retirements, and people thought these people are gone forever. They're never coming back. In actuality, over time, after a few years, as the economy improved, some of those retirees did come back or at least get part-time jobs again. And so that's really the hope, since there are so many job openings, that if we can sort of stabilize this Omicron and hopefully not have another variant, that people will feel comfortable enough to come back to work who maybe have been sitting on the sidelines because of those healthcare concerns. But obviously, it's been slow going. I mean, you look at the jobs reports and last few months, we have been adding jobs, but we've been adding jobs by about 500,000 a month on average. And I think a lot of people, myself included, really thought that later this fall, we would see more like 700,000 or even close to 1 million jobs added a month. And we're just not seeing that. I think another key, factor that I've been stressing a lot, Scott, is two things. You know, number one is a lot of these job openings are obviously in frontline jobs. You know, they're in jobs where, like restaurants or retail, where you have to show up in person to a shift. There's no work from home option. And if you look at the jobs that are going unfilled, as well as the jobs where there's the biggest resignations, people quitting, it's four categories: restaurants, and restaurants, hotel, hospitality is definitely number one, followed pretty closely by retail. But the other two that have really shot up in this last year are healthcare, which we can kind of understand. The burnout of being in a hospital right now or being in the healthcare system is obviously very tough in a pandemic. But the fourth one that people forget is manufacturing. There's been a huge uptick in people dropping out of manufacturing, which, even though it's usually seen as a pretty good job, again, you have to show up in person in the middle of a pandemic. And a lot of people just aren't comfortable right now with that.
You see, now this kind of is a little bit different. I mean, that has been cited as one of the reasons that so many people quit and didn't come back, is that they were concerned about the pandemic. But, we also have spoken, and you've written about, a lot of people saw it as an opportunity to maybe try something different, to make more money than what they were making before, or a career change where maybe they did feel a little bit safer, where they didn't have to show up in person. Are those still factors in why people are not returning?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. You're right. In my mind, from an economist perspective, one of the more encouraging signs, if we can even use the word encouraging during a pandemic, but has been how many Americans are starting their own businesses or becoming their own bosses. We've just seen a massive jump in new business applications. So a lot of people say to me, it's kind of now or never. I had a little bit of savings from the pandemic. I wasn't going out as much. I was able to save some more money. Or maybe they got to use those stimulus checks, put a little bit more savings from those in their bank account. And, I've even heard people, I remember talking to someone, I think they were in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and they said to me, I've worked at Applebee's for 2 decades. But my husband and I have always wanted to open a comic book store, and it was really cheap to rent a space. And we thought, why not? Let's try it. If it doesn't work out, we'll just go back to Applebee's and work there again. And, you have to be, is it going to work out for that couple? I don't know. Certainly it's hard to run a small business any time. But I was glad to hear that they felt they could try something. That's the spirit of America, the spirit of entrepreneurship, the spirit of going after your dreams. And so we have seen a good bit of that in the story I published at the end of last week. I followed some workers who quit a restaurant in just outside Little Rock, Arkansas. One of them, started his own music business. He's got a band. He's teaching music lessons. He's very good. He's a drummer. He's very good at mixing beats that people buy to use in commercials or use in their own music. And, it's been a struggle for him. He's not making a ton of money, but I think he's finally living his dream. And, he sort of said to me, like, I know I can get another job if I have to, but this was my chance. I sort of felt like it was my one chance.
Well, you touched on two topics that I did want to discuss with you that you've written about lately. And that is what happened to the people, so many people who resigned their jobs, who quit their jobs. And you use the Wunderhaus in Arkansas as an example of following what happened at that restaurant. We'll talk about the people who work there in just a moment. But you also wrote a column about there seems to be a mismatch between what employees, former workers, those looking for work, what they want. I mean, we've heard that many of them, as you just suggested, were looking for, this is my opportunity to start a business on my own or find something where I can make more money or just a career change. And that it was kind of looked at as the employee, the workers, were kind of driving this conversation because they were in the driver's seat. But the column you wrote said that there seems to be a mismatch, that there are a lot of employers out there who aren't willing to give up what they've done in the past, meaning that they're looking for experience. They're looking for a lot of times that the resumes that don't even make it to a person's desk because of long time periods of being employed. I don't want to answer the question for you. It's a long question, Heather, but let's talk about the mismatch first.
Yeah, definitely. So when you talk to people who run recruiting sites, the first thing they will tell you that people are searching for right now when they're looking for jobs is work from home. And obviously, fewer than 20% of jobs are work from home, have even an option to work from home or work hybrid. So my company is sort of saying, okay, you can work like 3 days in the office and 2 days at home, potentially. So even to get that, it's like under 20% of jobs. So obviously, there's more like 80% of people searching for this, and there's just not enough jobs like that. Yeah, the second one that people immediately search for when they get on those sites like Indeed.com and they're keying in, hey, I'm looking for jobs in my area, is pay. And any job that is listed for under $15 an hour gets very few clicks. And it's fascinating when some of those bigger companies make announcements, like when a Target says, hey, we're going to start everybody at least $15 or $16 an hour. Boom, there's suddenly a massive rush of people looking at their jobs on these sites like Indeed and Monster and stuff like that. So, so obviously those two, work from home, flexible work, and then pay are at the top of people's scale. The third one is benefits. And again, a lot of jobs, and certainly in the restaurant industry and hospitality industry, even if they do offer the potential to earn $15 to $20 an hour, they aren't offering healthcare benefits or retirement benefits or anything like that. So those are kind of your first three things, tick, tick, tick. And the bulk of the jobs that are out there right now, there are jobs across almost every sector, but the bulk of them are still in hospitality and retail. And, obviously those jobs do not offer much of those things we just discussed. So that's where there's a mismatch. There's also, we've done some analysis at the Washington Post. There's also just a lot more openings in the hospitality sector than there are people who had prior experience in that sector. And why does this matter? You hear so many business owners saying, I'm desperate. I'll take anybody with a heartbeat. And that's what they say to you, but that's not generally what actually happens. And I would say blame the robots for some of this problems getting workers back, in the sense that most not just large companies, but even mid-sized companies right now rely on algorithms, computers, robots to do their first screening and sometimes even their first interview with candidates. And those robots, when they're they have to be programmed. And what are they looking for? Often they're looking for at least 3 to 5 years of experience or at least 1 year of an experience in an industry. And again, that just weeds millions of people out who could potentially take some of these jobs.
What about gaps in employment? I mean, before the pandemic, often those robots you talk about, but even the human beings and human resources, if they saw a large gap on your resume of why you weren't employed for 6 months or so, you would cast some doubt on a candidate. But let's face it, after the pandemic started, there are a lot of people who haven't worked since the beginning of the pandemic or have had those large gaps. And it's not because they don't want to work. It's just that they haven't been able to. So has that been an issue as well?
Huge issue. Obviously, we're talking about those 1.5 million women. Maybe they're ready to get back in now. Their schools are open again. Their kids' daycare after school program is ready to go. And they say, okay, I'm ready to look for a job again. Except the problem is they have an almost 2 year gap now on their resume. And as you were pointing out, a lot of algorithms, a lot of these job search engines and resume readers are programmed in a way that if you have more than a 6 month gap, then you're weeded out. You don't even make the first cut. Whereas if we were sitting face to face and doing an interview with someone and they explained to you, I want to work, but my kid's situation was crazy or whatever, or we were caring for my elderly grandma or something, you would say, okay, there's a logical explanation for what's going on. It wasn't that this person just flaked out on their job. I think there's just been this unfortunate slowness to upgrade these search algorithms and these computer robots. And I think I just hope anybody listening to this, if you're in that situation and you own a company, please go check what your algorithm is really screening for. I think you might be surprised.
We have a few questions from listeners. Patty wants to know, she says, I have a question about how people are affording healthcare if they're starting their own business. Has Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, made a difference in people being able to start their own businesses?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point from Patty. I mean, the short answer is yes. And, partly it's that people can find their own healthcare through these exchanges. But the other thing that happened during the pandemic is anyone who was on more or less on unemployment, it became a lot easier to get a subsidy to afford to buy something on the exchange health exchanges. And so we've seen, I don't cover healthcare as well, but my company and others have written about this, that there's been like millions of more people who signed up for healthcare in the past year or two. Obviously, people were also worried. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You want to be able to go to the doctor if you have to, or go to the hospital, God forbid, if you need that. But she's right. There has been certainly a big surge in people getting health insurance.
We also have a question from Melissa. It says, I appreciate the conversation today. I see the impact on women and working class families every day regarding lack of childcare or inaccessible due to the price of childcare. My question about Build Back Better is President Biden able to get that in the bill, that what was in the bill implemented by executive order?
No. Basically, executive order is really tricky to spend any money, or certainly a large amounts of money. And the childcare provisions and Build Back Better, amount to hundreds of billions of dollars, depending upon how you add it up. It's around, it's one of the more expensive parts of the bill. And so you can't do that by executive order. Trust me, he would love to be able to do that, but that's not possible. It would need to pass the Senate.
Hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the grass being greener on the other side. So many people quit. If I could use a cliche of the grass being greener, it's hard to paint everyone with the same brush, but those who have quit their jobs, have they found those greener pastures? Have they, obviously some have, some haven't, but what have you found?
Yes, Scott, we would certainly love. It's kind of surprising we don't have more data on this. We know that in the United States, how many people quit their jobs, but we don't necessarily have great data on what happened next. The best data that we have came out of California, where they did a pretty extensive analysis of what happened to people who left, particularly the hospitality sector, which has seen the largest amounts of resignations, as well as people, you know, who lost their job during the pandemic. And what we're starting to see in that data, as well as the on-the-ground reporting I did in Arkansas, is the vast majority of people who leave hospitality jobs and restaurants and hotels are finding another job in restaurant, hospitality, or retail. So basically, they're going from something that was sort of low paid to something else that's still pretty low paid on the scale. They might be earning a few dollars more, but it's not like that many people are really going from a $12, $13 an hour job to starting their own business or to transforming their life. Interestingly, after the Great Recession in 08, 09, you may remember this, Scott, there was a huge surge in enrollment at community colleges like Harrisburg-Erity Community College and at four-year colleges as people wanted to go back and get retraining. Interestingly, this time we are not seeing that. Enrollment remains down this year, and it certainly was down in 2020 at four-year colleges and at many community colleges.
You mentioned that you focused, and this was also a podcast, very good one, I might add, focused on a restaurant in Arkansas that was greatly affected by the pandemic. Tell us about Wonder House.
I know, what a great name, Wonder House. It was serving German food, and then they expanded to kind of Eastern European and European broadly food. And, you know, it was a really neat, quirky restaurant that had something very unique to offer. A lot of people of their employees were kind of artsy and really loved working there. But of course, the pandemic changed everything. Some of the owners ended up moving to Nebraska. They sold their stake in the restaurant and they decided to just live a totally different life on a farm in Nebraska. And the ones who stayed, I think particularly for the kitchen staff, you know, you're working in a hot kitchen, you're wearing this mask, you're trying to keep this restaurant alive with fewer people who can come in person and trying to do more takeouts. And, you know, it was a pretty, and you're working with fewer people because not all the staff wanted to come back when they reopened in the summer of 2020. And, you know, unfortunately got to a point where there was basically a kitchen walkout. So sort of the leader of the kitchen left and then boom, boom, boom. Four other people immediately left in the following month. And so I followed those people. The kitchen walkout happened in sort of June, early July. And what I found was many were able to get jobs right away. No one regretted quitting Wonder House. And everyone said that their mental health was a lot better. You know, they just needed a change and they were burned out. But unfortunately, what I didn't expect is most of them were not better off financially. And half of them had gone from one restaurant job to another restaurant job in the same town that paid about the same amount of money or even less. So some of them were working for a dollar or two less somewhere else. But they, you know, said like, yeah, but I don't have to work as many hours or I get, you know, I don't know. They just felt it was better for their life. So I don't know, that kind of surprised me. And I think it plays into this bigger data that we're seeing from that California Policy Lab I mentioned that, you know, that's what they found out there, that the bulk of the folks in hospitality, you know, I think we were all hoping that they would find better career paths, use this as a real launch pad. And it's just really hard to do that when you are in a $10 to $15 an hour job.
And you kind of answered this question, but Wonder House, by the way, sounds like a restaurant you'd find in central Pennsylvania.
Yes, but, it does.
But would you say that the experiences of the workers and the people who owned Wonder House, by the way, unfortunately, they also went out of business. But do you think that those experiences are typical of what many of these type restaurant and service jobs are going through?
The data, the early data that we have certainly indicates what we were talking about, that a lot of folks who were working in hospitality jobs are having a hard time breaking out into other fields. We have seen a little bit of an uptick, as you might imagine, people going from maybe a restaurant or a retail job to work in a warehouse where they can earn a little bit more. But obviously, you know, that's pretty demanding. It's a very physical job. You're on your feet. You got to be able to lift a certain amount of weight to do a job in a warehouse. So, you know, some people have made that transition, but not as many as you might expect. And there are occasional stories that you hear, and there's obviously some one or two in my story example of, you know, people quitting a restaurant job and starting their own business or something along those lines. But it's certainly more the exception than the bulk of what's going on to see people really changing their life dramatically.
Hmm. Washington Post economic correspondent Heather Long, formerly a columnist and deputy editorial page editor for the Patriot News. Heather, I always like talking with you. Thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Scott. Happy holidays.